Well, good morning. So this past weekend, I've spent some time with a philosopher by the name of Hannah Arendt. And excellent. Her final, I guess, book, but technically was in... It's supposed to be in three volumes, but ended up being in two because it was unfinished. What's interesting is the unfinished is Judgment, the last part, which is exactly Nietzsche. He says, Schatzen, I would translate it as evaluation. Hannah called it judging, right? It's similar, right? You have to judge for oneself. But I thought I'd just share... I'm just going through all the different philosophers on Nietzsche, right? Bloom agrees. I could mention a dozen others, but why bother wasting our time here? But I was just listening to Will Durant, Will and Ariel, obviously, about Nietzsche, and he is just giving you an introduction. It's about 2 hours of an introduction to philosophy of Nietzsche, and that's about all you could get into it in 2 hours. But what I found funny is, besides throwing a little shade here and there and making some jokes about obviously how highly he held Nietzsche in his philosophy, in one paragraph he mentions how Nietzsche went to philosophy and he did such a good job. He had such a great insight into the nature of ourselves, reality, what drives us. He certainly could thank... his readings of Buddhism, Brahmanism, the Upanishads, the Vedas, Schopenhauer, Kant, you name it. Certainly Goethe. But what's interesting is Will Durant, when he's writing about the philosophy of Nietzsche, he mentions, of course, his most important philosophy, this philosophy of the eternal return or the eternal recurrence. Very related or arguably identical idea of amor fati, right? To love your fate. But the eternal recurrence, as I said, after Durant mentioned that he went into philosophy, psychology, and became, excellent psychologist, as he is a philosopher and a philologist. But he mentions the eternal return as his philosophy instead of his psychology, right? And I say that is, well, arguably we can go back to the Bible, the idea of to carry your burden, to learn how to carry your burden, right? This is why I love the Book of Job or St. John's Obscure Night of the Soul, the same idea that you're never closer to your meaning than when you suffer or when you feel most disconnected from your creation, from your raison d'être, as they say in French, right? Your reason for being. Whether it be simply, as I said, creation, be Camus or Nietzsche. But Nietzsche's secret is, if life is absurd, if life is suffering, Camus, existentialist, the Buddhist, the Hindus, however you want to see it, our disconnection from the divine is what causes this suffering, this malaise. It doesn't matter. Jung said that 20% of his patients suffered from just this unattributable malaise. I call it the modern malaise, where we're just suffering because we need to have meaning, we need to have value, and we need to value what we bring into the universe, our creation. And so Nietzsche essentially boiled it all down to this very simple truth. And this is present in Buddhism, but very often missed in translation. And I think it's Western Buddhism to blame. Nietzsche was lucky because he had a number of sources to read, as well as a good friend who was an expert on Sanskrit and this philosophy. So he came up with this idea of the eternal return, the eternal recurrence. And what that means is he realizes, as modern physics, Carl Friston would call this free energy, the mind is a matrix, a predictive matrix. I say that because Chittamatra is the same philosophy that if Nietzsche had been introduced to, he would have realized that, oh, that's the solution I was looking for. Chittamatra is mind matrix, but what it means is our existence is established, defined, and understood via our own perception, our own minds. Therefore, our suffering is also mind-born. So he argues the trick to surviving, whatever it may be, disappointment, suffering, disconnection, is his eternal return, this eternal recurrence. He realized that until we can look at our life as predestined in the sense that we wouldn't ask it to be any different, we would only ask to be able to live it again, that is the true healing of this modern malaise, when we realize that we suffer, as Carl Fursten says, we suffer because the mind is this predictive matrix, tells us what to expect, yet when something surprising or unexpected happens, or we don't feel the outcome was what we wanted or expected or deserved, the argument is the denial of our reality is the source of our suffering. That Nietzsche thinks that if we were to embrace the eternal return, the amor fati, to love our fate, no matter what it may bring, right, to ignore these labels of good and bad and just understand that they are all our lot, he feels that that would be the solution to our suffering, to our malaise, to our distraction, and arguably even to our negativity, our apathy, our evil, you name it. If we were to realize that we simply need to embrace our present, our now, and understand that a denial of reality, of our lot, of our situation, of our know ourself, know thyself, right? As Schopenhauer said that, we need to understand ourselves, we need to listen to ourselves, we need to talk to ourselves, and we need to correct ourselves if need be. But as we are, we need to accept. We can't deny our lot, our biases, our existence, even our past. But it doesn't define who we are. I do love that because Will even mentions this idea that we do have to define ourselves, but not at the expense of any other. You can see in this philosophy, I mean, in less than 2 hours, you can hear where Nietzsche has influenced so many philosophies, the philosophers, psychology, and understanding of our experience. But so few, I mean, as Harold Bloom likes to kid, Carl Jung openly admits it, but Freud does not. But it's obvious in his philosophy that Nietzsche played a huge part of his understanding of not just our existence, but how to make it in this situation. And I guess the last thing I'll mention is one of my favorite lines from Rudyard Kipling's If. And remember, this was written, his father was an Indologist what would you call him, a museum curator, and he was trying to save not just the antiquities, but the culture and the philosophy of ancient India, Bharat. And in it, there's a line that says, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, right, this effort and acceptance, and more so, an affirmation that our lot is what we have. The Buddhists often talk about this, that we don't discuss reincarnation because we're not meant to deny this existence. This is a 1 in 100 trillion opportunity for us to achieve, betterment, to be better than our previous self, as Hemingway said. So to not to not live for now. This is what I said. If Nietzsche had realized in Yogacara or Chittamatra, the idea that you can't deny our somatic experience, you can't deny the body, you can't deny our emotions, our existence, because it is how we navigate. That this balance can be found between, you know, what a failing being we are, what inherent suffering existence is, but there's a freedom found in not just carrying one's burden, but as Camus said, we must imagine Sisyphus. I mean, happy or content, it depends on how you want to see it, but to not question our lot, right? To embrace whatever the universe might give us is the evaluator, is this judging, willing being, truly. When we can embrace our destiny, our lot, whatever you want to call it, that's how we can navigate. I can't remember a quote, but there's a quote talking about how we suffer most because of what we carry, because we won't put it down. My favorite is a couple of monks, one senior monk and one junior, walking a path, and they come to a river, and there's a young lady on one side of the river. So the older monk helps the young lady across the river. And keep in mind, they had tenets not to interact, certainly not to touch members of the opposite sect. And so the two monks continue down their road on their trip, and, what have you, a couple kilometers, a couple miles down the road. The junior monk turns to the senior monk and says, why would you risk your efforts, your potential salvation, depending on how you want to structure, why would you risk your vows by, interacting, touching that young lady? And the monk says, what you don't understand is I left that young lady on the opposite bank, but you have continued to carry her for all this distance since, right? So it's no different than the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, where there's a section where it says yoga is simply citta vritti niroda. So it's an attempt to cease the needless fluctuations, this needless flapping of the self. Not to completely cease all being, but to stop justifying or hoping, or, as I said before, Carl Friston thinks that the mind, being a predictive matrix, tells us what to expect, so we're not as surprised. But if something happens that we didn't predict or it's not what we were hoping for, our job is to embrace this and to work with it. So the question is the majority, or maybe even the complete suffering of existence might flow from the same idea that, as Nietzsche calls this, beyond good and evil. When we realize that labeling of good or evil, pro or con, all very perspectival, but it's personal, right? So truly, we've seen many people who seem delusional when everything goes wrong in their life, and they say, you're winning or you're learning. But truly, That is the only way, is to embrace our lot.